This is VOA News, reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. Tanzanians are observing 14 days of national mourning and flags are flying at half-mast in honor of President John Magufuli, a prominent COVID-19 skeptic in Africa who died at age 61. His vice president said that Magufuli died Wednesday of heart failure. Magufuli had not been seen in public since the end of February, and top government officials had denied that he was in ill health, even as rumors swirled online that he was sick and possibly incapacitated from illness. According to Tanzania's constitution, Vice President Hassan will be sworn in as the new president and should serve the remainder of Magufuli's five-year term, which he began last year. Here in the U.S., U.S. Atlanta shootings, the man charged with the killings of eight people in a series of shootings at massage parlors in the southeastern state of Georgia is expected to be arraigned Thursday. Prosecutors are charging 21-year-old Robert Aaron Long of Georgia with eight counts of murder and one count of aggravated assault. He was arrested after the Atlanta area shootings late Tuesday and is being held in the Cherokee County Detention Center. Police said Wednesday they did not yet have a motive for the shootings, in which six of those killed were women of Asian descent. Authorities say when Long was taken custody, he told police the attacks were not racially motivated and that he had issues with sex addiction. The crime wave raised fear in the Asian American community, which was already reeling from attacks that occurred at the start of the coronavirus pandemic a year ago. This is VOA News. Nine Afghan Security Force members were killed in a helicopter crash in central Afghanistan late Wednesday. The Defense Ministry said in a statement they were investigating the crash, which took place in the Maidan Wardak province, and the dead include crew members and special force members. An Air Force source and provincial official told Reuters that the helicopter was hit by a rocket while taking off. Three people were killed, 11 wounded, and a roadside bomb hit a bus carrying Afghan government employees in Kabul Thursday. Officials said the bombing comes on the day the Afghan government, Taliban, and key countries, including the United States and Russia, came to Moscow to push for a reduction in violence to propel the Afghan peace process forward. No one has claimed responsibility for the blast, but the Afghan government is blaming the Taliban for running an assassination campaign against government employees, civil society figures, as well as journalists. The insurgent Taliban has denied being involved in the campaign. The World Health Organization issued a statement Wednesday saying it believes the benefits of the AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine outweigh its risk and recommends that vaccinations continue. The agency noted several European Union countries have temporarily suspended use of the AstraZeneca vaccine after reports of blood clots in some people who received it. The WHO statement said any vaccination against COVID-19 will not reduce illness or deaths from other causes. The WHO said its Global Advisory Committee on Vaccine Safety continues to carefully assess the latest available safety data on the AstraZeneca vaccine and will immediately communicate its findings. The Biden administration is expanding coronavirus testing for teachers, staff, and students, and convening a summit for educators to share the best practices for returning children to the classroom. In the White House briefing room, Education Secretary Miguel Cardona said his priority is to get as many schools open as soon and as safely as possible. He says the recently passed virus relief bill will send $122 billion to schools nationwide for needed changes like new ventilation systems. Cardona says he expects schools will fully open in the fall if vaccinations continue as expected. For more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com, also on the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, reporting by remote, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 18, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Tanzanian President John Magufuli has died.
Vice President Samia Suluhu Hassan announced that President John Magufuli passed away at 12 p.m. on 17th of March, heart disease complications.
We'll have reaction from Tanzania's main opposition leader, Tundu Lissu. The U.S. ambassador to Lesotho says the U.S. will continue to remain a friend of Lesotho. Sudan requests to UN, U.S., EU help to resolve conflict with Ethiopia over dam. And who bombed the headquarters of Liberia's Elections Commission?
I cannot say for sure this latest arson attack on the commission is related to the cases we have heard and ruled on. But we can say and we urge Liberians to resort to the law for redress of any grievance.
And a new educational platform aims to increase connectivity in some Francophone West African countries. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Tanzanian President John Magufuli has died. On the line from Dar es Salaam is VOA Swahili language reporter Eid Uwesu. Good morning, Eid. Welcome to Daybreak Africa.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Thank you. What's the news in Tanzania about the passing of President John Magufuli?
Vice President Samia Suluhu Hassan has announced earlier that President John Magufuli passed away at 12 p.m. on 17th of March, heart disease complications. And he was admitted on March 6th at Muhimbili National Hospital at Jakaya Kikwete Heart Institute. On 7th of March, he was released and resumed his duties as normal. But on 14th of March this year, he fell ill again and he was rushed to Zena Hospital here in Dar es Salaam, where he was receiving treatment until his death on 17th of March. So according to Vice President Samia Suluhu Hassan, arrangement for funerals are ongoing, and he will notify the country when President Magufuli will be laid to rest. But the country now enters under period of mourning for 14 days, and flags will fly at half-mast.
Uwesu, we know that according to reports that came to us, that President Magufuli had not been seen in public since February 27. Did the Tanzanian people see the president during this time?
It is true that he hasn't been seen in the public for at least 3 weeks. And all the time has been news come up, where is President Magufuli? But the government never said anything until today they pronounced his death. But for all that time, when the people tried to ask, none of the government officials came and said whereabouts of President. And they were even denied that he was fell ill. But today, the news came, he died.
Is President Magufuli a Muslim? Because you mentioned the funeral arrangements. Is he a Muslim?
No, he's a Christian. He's Catholic.
I know it's very early in Tanzania. The announcement by the vice president. When did the vice president make the announcement?
Vice President made his announcement on 17th of March at 11:30 p.m.
So it could be true that most people in Tanzania probably may not know yet that their president has passed away.
I'm not sure, due to these social networks. You know, everybody receives news early, and big news like this, it may wake up even some of them. So that I think most of the nation now having a news that the president is gone.
According to Tanzania constitution, who becomes the next president?
After the death of the president, according to Tanzanian constitution, the vice president will assume the responsibilities of the president. So we are expecting that Vice President Samia Suluhu Hassan is going to be a president of Tanzania until the next election.
Uwesu, thank you so much for speaking with us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you so much.
That was VOA Swahili language reporter Eid Uwesu speaking with us from the Tanzanian capital, Dar es Salaam. Tanzania's main opposition leader, Tundu Lissu, was perhaps the first to tell the world that President John Magufuli had been sick and was hospitalized in Kenya. President Magufuli was a denier of COVID-19. He told Tanzanians to put their trust in prayer and homemade treatments against COVID-19. Tundu Lissu joins us now from TNM, Belgium.
Thank you so much for your time, Mr. Bate.
What can you tell us about this news from Tanzania?
Well, a vice president does not tell the nation a lie when she says that a president of the country has passed away. So the news is true. Magufuli is dead.
There's been very little information from Tanzania since President Magufuli went missing on February 27. Do you know now what happened and where did this take place?
Well, from the little that the vice president has said, she hasn't given much details. From where I am, I have not really heard where it happened. But that should not matter. It does not really matter where he died. The point is, he's dead. I have been saying for over a week that the president was sick. I have been demanding the government to come forth and tell Tanzanians the truth. They have not been forthcoming. But finally, you cannot hide a death. And certainly, you cannot hide the death of the president. And therefore, they've finally been smoked out of their foxholes, as it were. And they've been forced to tell the truth finally.
I guess what I was asking also is that there was an announcement on the Tanzanian national television to the people of Tanzania. What did they say? What did he die from?
Well, the little piece that I have seen, the little clip that has come my way, does not say anything about what, but it doesn't really matter now. They don't have to tell us where, how, and why he died. We have known, at least I have been saying this for the past 10 days, that he had contracted corona, and corona brought on other complications. I was given very credible information that after corona struck, he had a massive heart attack, and he's been comatose for quite some time. So even though the vice president has not said the cause of death, but the point is he's died, and he's died of corona. They would not say it because this man had thumbed his nose to the world. He had declared the country corona-free when people who knew better knew that there were Tanzanians dying of corona. This guy went contrary to every known norm of civility with regard to the fight against corona, defied the world, defied science. He put his faith to prayers, to steam inhalations, to herbal concoctions of unproven quality, of an unproven effectiveness, and as they say, it's poetic justice.
Mr. Lissu, what is your evidence that the president died from COVID-19?
I know because I was told by people who I'm not going to name, but they told me 2 weeks ago that the president had COVID-19. They later told me that he had suffered a massive heart attack. That was last week when he was transferred to Nairobi on Monday last week. We were talking about COVID-19 then. They said the president is fine. The president is working. And now they are saying, a week later, they are now saying, he has just died and he died of heart attack. And they want us to believe them. It's a bit late in the day for them to be believed, Mr. Bhatti. I don't believe them.
Politically, Mr. Lissu, you are in exile. And what does the death of President Magufuli mean for democracy in Tanzania?
That's a very good question. I think what Mr. Magufuli's death does to the country is to allow us to open a new chapter for our country. President Magufuli's five-year administration literally destroyed the foundations, the constitutional foundations of our country, destroyed democracy, destroyed rule of law, undermined human rights, killed and maimed and tortured and destroyed the economy. Now that he's dead, our country has now gotten a new lease on life, if I were to use that term. It is now an opportunity for us to sit together to carry out an exercise of national reconciliation, national dialogue.
Thank you so much, Mr. Lisu. It's always nice to speak with you. And please, I would say, please accept our condolences.
I will pass the condolences along to the family, my brother.
That was Tundu Lisu, Tanzania's main opposition leader, speaking with us from Tienne, Belgium. State Department spokesperson Ned Price extended U.S. condolences to Tanzanians mourning the passing of President John Pombe Magufuli. Price said, "We will continue to work with the government of Tanzania to improve ties between the American and Tanzanian people," he said. Price said the United States remains committed to continuing to support Tanzanians as they advocate for respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms and work to combat the COVID-19 pandemic. He says, "We hope that Tanzania can move forward on a democratic and prosperous path." Liberian police say they are investigating an arson attack on the Liberian National Elections Commission's NEC headquarters in the capital, Monrovia, on Tuesday. The police said the unidentified attackers petrol-bombed the headquarters and vandalized properties valued at $45,000. Rita Yulabwe reports from Monrovia.
The commission in its Tuesday's statement says an old man threw petrol bombs on the top of a garage in its Monrovia headquarters, setting ablaze a double cabin pickup and the zinc roof of the garage. And it says acting deputy public affairs director Prince Dumba, who released the statement, says some of the petrol bombs thrown in the compound failed to explode and were discovered later. In an interview with VOA Elections Commission Chair person, Madam Devi Eto Branlan-Sanan, says there was no casualty during the attack. She, however, says she is hopeful that the Liberian National Police will take seize of the matter.
The initial reaction was, "Oh my God, did anyone get hurt?" And once that was ruled out, we pondered over what might be the motive. But as we await the final report from the Liberian National Police, we can only speculate.
Madam Branlan-Sanan says while the perpetrators and their intents are still unknown, she will encourage all these enchanted Liberians to channel their grievances through the country's judicial system rather than attacking the offices of the commission.
I cannot say for sure this latest arson attack on the commission is related to the cases we have heard and ruled on. It could be anything, since we don't know the intent of the doers of the act. But we can say, and we urge Liberians to resort to the law for redress of any grievance, especially those emanating from the commission's electoral activities.
Meanwhile, Liberian National Police spokesperson Moses Carter says the police has launched an investigation into the matter.
We've launched investigation into the incident at the National Election Commission. We are working with community residents and interested persons to be able to give us useful information, because we want to make sure that anyone connected to that act, we can have them apprehended. But as I speak to you, we have not apprehended anyone in connection to the incident.
Carter says the police are providing security at the Elections Commission headquarters until all electoral disputes resulting from the December 8, 2020 senatorial elections are resolved.
We have provided all the necessary security at the headquarters of the National Elections Commission, because we understand that there are a lot of hearings going on as a result of the last, or the just ended 2020 elections. We are up to the task of ensuring that the premises of the Election Commission is protected.
This attack comes in the wake of unresolved controversies surrounding the December 8, 2020 midterm senatorial election, with many Liberians expressing disappointment with the slow pace at which the commission is moving to resolve complaints. Rita Jrabwe, VOA News, Monrovia, Liberia.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 18.
The U.S. ambassador to Lesotho, Rebecca Gonzalez, says the U.S. will continue to remain a friend of Lesotho. She says the U.S. is one of Lesotho's longest-standing and resolute partners, dating back to Lesotho's independence in 1966. Relations between the two countries have been strained recently due to allegations that some Lesotho government officials are involved in human trafficking. This prompted the U.S. to downgrade Lesotho to Tier 3 on the State Department's Trafficking in Persons report. Ambassador Gonzalez warned last year that if Lesotho did not address the human trafficking question by February 2021, Lesotho will lose U.S. development assistance. Lesotho's Home Affairs Minister Maud Lentua Lesosa told VOA last month that his government submitted a report on human trafficking to the U.S. Embassy in Maseru on February 12. Ambassador Gonzalez says while the U.S. is encouraged by the report, it looks forward to sustained action by Lesotho in addressing the issue of human trafficking.
Indeed, we did get that report, and I have to tell you that it was the first time in a long time that we had actually gotten a response. And if I could just make a couple of comments, you know, there's been a lot of focus on this, and I always say and begin by saying that, you know, the friendship between the United States and Lesotho is enduring. We are friends. We will remain friends. We are Lesotho's longest standing, I would say most resolute partner. With respect to trafficking in persons and what the government has been doing, you know, for the previous 3 years, I was directly engaged with my counterparts at the highest level of government. And honestly, there was no significant progress on trafficking in persons. So this year, we did receive the government of Lesotho's trafficking in persons response. And I have to say that, you know, we congratulate the government of Lesotho for submitting the report. And while we are encouraged by these actions, the United States is still looking to see sustained action to enforce legislation and bolster efforts to implement new initiatives to address the issues of human trafficking in Lesotho. And officials that were found complicit in any form of human trafficking must be held accountable.
So, Ambassador, when I spoke to the Home Affairs Minister, he said that he has told the Lesotho police that they could get any information they wanted on any official that they are investigating. Could you explain what seriousness means?
Yes. First of all, I'd like to say that, you know, it was very encouraging to see Prime Minister Majoro and his cabinet introduce legislation to strengthen protections for victims of trafficking and to better empower law enforcement officials to punish traffickers. This is a landmark progress. And it's a first for Lesotho. Now I strongly urge the government to ensure that these new anti-trafficking laws are faithfully executed. And the standard of progress here, as in any investigation, is to identify primary suspects, vigorously pursue investigative leads with clear outcomes, and wield prosecutorial powers per the law. One encouraging area is the Lesotho Mounted Police's engagement with U.S. law enforcement to investigate persons linked to human trafficking allegations.
Lesotho was downgraded to Tier 3 on the U.S. Trafficking in Persons report. Is the U.S. ready now to reconsider upgrading Lesotho's status?
The ultimate decision on Lesotho's trafficking in persons tier ranking is going to be made in Washington. And that decision will be based on reporting from the embassy.
Ambassador, you have also said in the past that Lesotho African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA trade benefit. AGOA is so important to Lesotho. So is the U.S. also ready to pull the plug if conditions are not met?
Well, as you noted, you know, AGOA is a trade benefit program that grants preferential trade access to countries whose government prioritizes the protection of internationally recognized worker rights, including protecting victims of forced labor on trafficking. And so AGOA eligibility is not directly tied to Lesotho's trafficking in persons tier. However, when considering a country's AGOA eligibility, the U.S. Trade Representative may consider how well that country's government is protecting human rights. Human trafficking is certainly a human rights violation.
That was U.S. Ambassador to Lesotho, Rebecca Gonzalez, speaking with us from the capital, Maseru. Sudan has formally requested four-party mediation on the standoff with Ethiopia over Addis Ababa's Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, a hydropower dam on the Blue Nile River. Naba Mohideen speaks to analysts about the implications of the standoff and prospects for mediation in this report from Khartoum.
Sudan on Monday formally requested mediation help after a breakdown in talks with the Ethiopian government. Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok asked the African Union, the United Nations, the European Union, and the United States in formal letters Monday to help Sudan and neighboring Egypt reach a legal agreement with Ethiopia on when and how Ethiopia fills the reservoir behind the massive dam. Ethiopia started to build the hydropower dam in 2011 and filled the reservoir for the first time in 2020, leading to a breakdown in the long-running talks. The Egyptian and Sudanese government are worried that the dam will reduce the level of the Nile downstream and deprive their populations of water for agriculture and everyday life. Sudanese security analyst Hanafi Abdullah thinks the Ethiopian-Sudanese dispute in particular will raise regional tensions if the countries can't reach an agreement. He says in the case of the parties in transigence, Sudan may make further regional and international efforts to punish Ethiopia by bringing political and economic pressures. The region shall witness security implications out of these disputes. They will definitely affect the security of the Horn of Africa region and could lead to a turmoil. Sudan has said the dam puts at least half of its population at risk. The African Union, which has led the talks between the three countries, didn't comment on Hamdok's request, but has previously encouraged them to resume the talks. Security expert General Mohamed Bashir believes the countries should avoid war at all costs. He says that the two countries could not bear to be involved in a war and worsen their own complicated situations. They should be aware of the implication of such disputes, not only in the two countries, but extending to include the Red Sea and the region. And the world wouldn't accept a war erupting in this fragile region. Ethiopian Minister of Foreign Affairs Dina Mufti said his country has not received any formal notifications from Sudan and Egypt on their four-party mediation request. He praised the role of the African Union on mediating in the continental dispute. Dina said Ethiopia is willing to resume negotiations before the second filling of the dam, despite the country's earlier dismissal of negotiations. Filling of the reservoir is scheduled to begin in April. Naba Mohideen for VOA News, Khartoum.
A new educational platform aims to increase connectivity and help students in a variety of French-speaking countries access opportunities. Dimitri Sanga, Regional Director for UNESCO's West and Central Africa Office, talked to Ricky Stryak about the opportunities and challenges for the program, which they will implement in countries including Burkina Faso, Benin, Togo, Senegal, and more.
One of the issues that we face, putting in place mechanisms that will ensure continuity of learning, is to use education resources that were designed to face-to-face interaction between the teachers and students. There's a need to take those resources and translate them into digitalize them so that they can be used online. So imagine a call is a response to such problems that we face. It's more than a distance learning platform. It's an initiative around high quality education resources, production, sharing, and access to these resources. As a matter of fact, one of the objectives of Imagine a Call is to equip teachers with the knowledge and the skills to identify and define what is a good quality distance learning education resource and adapt it to the national context.
Speaking of national context, why are the countries that were chosen for this ideal for this kind of platform?
Yes, countries are different, but they have a number of issues in common. One is that even before the COVID-19, they had some distance learning agendas. If I pick up a country like Burkina Faso, you know that there are a lot of problems with insecurity, and then people are on the move. They are either internally displaced, people in their own country. So there's a need to find a way of bringing education services to those people on the movement.
That was Dimitri Songa, Regional Director for UNESCO's Western Central Africa Office. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. And that's it for this Thursday, March 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barton, Washington.